WHYY is proudly supported by Penn Medicine. From groundbreaking discoveries to life-saving care, Penn Medicine's innovation is helping to change lives, one moment, one treatment, one patient at a time.
As scientists during World War II raced to build the first atomic bomb, they injected 18 unsuspecting hospital patients with plutonium to study the effects of plutonium on the human body. Coming up, we talk with journalist Eileen Welsom, author of The Plutonium Files. This is Fresh Air. I'm Terry Gross. Last week, the government admitted that workers who helped make the first nuclear weapons were exposed to radiation and chemicals that led to cancer. Here's a related story. When the scientists with the Manhattan Project were creating the first atom bombs, they worried about the health hazards of plutonium and the possibility of it causing a cancer epidemic. As part of the top-secret Manhattan Project, 18 hospital patients were injected with plutonium without their knowledge. Not only were the injections top-secret, the very existence of plutonium was top-secret. The patients were all believed to be terminally ill and were in hospitals adjacent to nuclear research facilities. Most of the patients were injected with 5 micrograms of plutonium, which was 5 times the dose that doctors in 1945 believed would cause cancer. But 2 of the patients were injected with 95 micrograms. My guest, Eileen Welsom, has investigated the story since 1987 and won a 1994 Pulitzer Prize for his series in the Albuquerque Tribune. Now she's written a new book called The Plutonium Files. She learned that there were no cancers that could directly be attributed to the injections, but the patients weren't monitored after the experiments ended.
The injections occurred between 1945 and 1947. 3 of them occurred during the war, and the remainder occurred after the war. What I found in documents that were not made public until the mid-90s is that after the Manhattan Project was disbanded and the Atomic Energy Commission came into being, there was a great furor inside the commission about this experiment. And essentially, the decision was made to classify all these reports top secret. So over time, this study and these people were more or less forgotten. In the mid-70s, a scientist from Berkeley by the name of Patricia Durbin, who had worked with one of the original scientists there who was involved in 3 of the California injections, rediscovered this experiment more or less. And at that time, the survivors were brought back into the hospital, Strong Memorial Hospital at Rochester, and studied. And a program was undertaken to exhume the bodies of some of the deceased patients. And at that time is when they took blood tests and urine and stool samples and x-rays and discovered the bone changes to these patients. So they were never followed during their lifetime to see the long-term effects of these injections.
Were you able to meet any of the survivors?
That was my hope when I first started out investigating this experiment. But I soon learned that the last survivor, his name was Elmer Allen, he lived in Italy, Texas, he died about a year before I found his family, before I discovered his identity and found his widow, Fredna Allen. So I was not able to interview any of these patients. I did, however, interview their wives. I interviewed their children. I interviewed their nephews and nieces. I interviewed their neighbors. I tried to interview anybody and everybody who might have known them. And in several cases, I also was able to get a hold of their medical records. And so I was able to learn more about their lives through that process as well.
What were some of the family reactions?
Well, the families were, it was a very touchy situation because it sounded rather far-fetched when I contacted them.
Oh, you broke the news?
That's correct. None of these families knew what happened to their loved ones until I tracked them down and told them. And I had to be very careful because I was in the process of trying to, A, make sure that these, in fact, were the correct individuals I was looking for. And I also didn't want to put words in anybody's mouth. So I approached the subject rather gingerly and told them, and then also supplied them with whatever documents I had obtained from the federal government about what happened to them. And most of the people were initially rather bemused by it, very surprised, very shocked. But it was only after thinking about it and in the months and weeks to come that they grew very angry about what had been done to their loved ones.
Has any of them taken action against the government, filed any lawsuit?
After I identified five of these individuals, there was a huge national furor, and President Clinton instructed all the federal agencies to make any records on any of these experiments public, and at which point thousands and thousands of records started flowing into the public domain. I also was able to obtain more records on the experiment, and was able to identify all but one of the remaining patients. And in the following months and years, a number of these people, not just the relatives of the plutonium injectees, but subjects and relatives in other parts of the country banded together and did file lawsuits against the federal government. The families of the plutonium injectees eventually were awarded, on average, $400,000 apiece.
What about the scientists behind these experiments? What were their justifications for injecting plutonium into people who didn't even know what was happening?
I think that they were patriots gone awry. I think that they felt felt it was imperative to know more about this material in order to better set standards, in order to protect the workers who were actually handling this new substance. As I mentioned, all the plutonium in the world could have fit on the head of a pin, but they knew in a matter of months that they were going to have kilograms of this stuff. And they knew that plutonium behaved like radium, and they knew that 1 microgram of radium, which is a millionth of a gram, could cause cancer. So they just felt that that it was imperative to get this information, and it outweighed any ethical concerns about should we tell these people? Is this the right thing to do? I think they just felt that the ends justified the means.
My guest is Eileen Welsom, author of The Plutonium Files. We'll talk more after a break. This is Fresh Air. My guest Eileen Welsom won a Pulitzer Prize for her reporting on the Manhattan Project's secret medical experiments during and shortly after World War II, injecting unsuspecting hospital patients with plutonium. Now, injecting plutonium into unknowing people in the hospital was just one aspect of the radiation experiments that you investigated. You also investigated something called total body irradiation, known as TBI, total body irradiation. What is that, and what was the purpose of the experiments with total body irradiation?
During the war, the scientists, it's hard for us to realize now, but during the war, very little was known about radiation, both its external effects and the effects caused by radioisotopes that were absorbed internally. So during the war, they did a lot of down and dirty experiments. And then they dropped the bombs on Hiroshima and Nagasaki. And a lot of the doctors and scientists working on the Manhattan Project went over there to see what had happened, along with a number of military personnel. And I think that when they got there, a lot of the people were still dying of radiation sickness caused by the bomb. Their hair was still falling out. They were still vomiting. Some of them were still experiencing diarrhea. They had horrific burns. They were developing gangrene. They had pneumonia, and so on. And I think putting myself in the place of the doctors and scientists that arrived there in these burnt-out cities, in this rubble, that they were just simply horrified by what these bombs had done. And so when they returned to the United States, they embarked upon a vast research effort that just grew and grew and grew over time. They believed, both the doctors and scientists and military officials and the government, that the next war would be a nuclear war, that it would be fought on an atomic battlefield in which soldiers would be going into the battle where bombs were going off 100 feet away from them. And the generals needed to know, well, what's going to happen to my troops? Are they going to fall down and die? Are they going to get sick and start vomiting? Are they going to be able to proceed forward and to attack the enemy? And so they needed to know more about the effects of radiation, total body radiation. And so a number of the studies that were done after the war were done in civilian hospitals. They were sponsored by the military, in which patients who were undergoing radiation for their cancers were irradiated over their whole bodies. And then the scientists and doctors sort of observed the responses, and they provided this information to the military, which in turn would help the generals learn more about how to fight a nuclear war.
Who was chosen as research subjects for these experiments into total body irradiation?
There were patients at MD Anderson Hospital in Houston, Texas. There were patients at Cincinnati General Hospital in Ohio. And there were some other studies that were also done around the country. And these studies were funded by the Pentagon. The patients were observed, and information about the nausea and the vomiting were taken down and passed to the military. The other thing that they were looking for was called a dosimeter, or a measurement, something that could be administered on the atomic battlefield so that the doctors would know who was worth saving and who was going to die. If they knew a soldier had just gotten 400 rads, well, that gentleman was going to die, and they could move on to the next injured soldier.
So the people who were given this total body irradiation, what were they told? They weren't told that they were being used as part of this larger medical experiment.
Well, there's conflicting information about what they were told. For example, I'll speak about Cincinnati. The doctors and scientists there contend to this day that the patients were told that part of the purpose of this experiment was to help the military learn more about nuclear warfare. But the relatives of the patients maintained that their loved ones were not told anything about the purpose of this study, and that they were simply told that this was an experimental treatment that might reduce the pain from their cancers, wouldn't necessarily eradicate the cancer, but might make them feel more comfortable, shrink the tumor, and so on.
What did you learn about the side effects of these experiments?
Well, these experiments were horrific studies, and the Pentagon records that have been made public show that a number of the patients began vomiting almost immediately upon exposure and died within 15, 30 to 60 days, the time period in which the effects of radiation would occur, and that they died from the exposures and not from their diseases. So they did suffer tremendously, and many of them were in acute pain when they died.
Eileen, how did you first get onto this story?
I was working as a reporter at the Albuquerque Tribune in 1987, and I was doing a story about water at Kirtland Air Force Base, and I came across an Air Force report about sites around the country that it was going to clean up. And in that report, there were two sites at Kirtland Air Force Base that contained radioactive animal carcasses. And I was really struck by that, and I wondered what kind of animals were in the dumps and why were they radioactive. So I eventually managed to get a hold of a bunch of reports on these old animal experiments, and I went over to the base one afternoon and read them. And toward the end of the day, in one of these animal reports, my eye fell on a footnote describing 18 humans who had been injected with plutonium. And I sort of sat up. I was struck by that information. I was astonished to think the federal government had injected 18 of its own citizens with plutonium. And so I began my research the next day at the University of New Mexico Library looking into this. And what I found out was that these 18 people who were known by code numbers only had been injected by the doctors and scientists working for the Manhattan Project. And so through the years, I gradually accumulated data on this experiment, trying to find anything I could, any scrap of information I could, that would help me identify these people.
How difficult was it to get the files from the government on these experiments?
It was extremely, extremely difficult. And in fact, I pushed and pulled and poked and called them and nagged them. And they sent me a few scraps of paper, fact sheets upon anything that would have identified the scientists who were involved in this study or the patients had been whited out. And I would call and say, well, you know, you must have more. This was obviously an important study to you. There's no privacy issue here. All the patients are dead. There's no security issues. There's got to be more documents on this. And they essentially said that there wasn't. And they also said they would not release the names. I don't think they even had the names of these people. So I, through these documents, through the scientific reports I was able to acquire, and through the fact sheets that the federal government sent me, I tracked down these names of these people on my own. And I just got lucky.
My guest is Eileen Welsom, author of The Plutonium Files. We'll talk more after a break. This is Fresh Air. My guest Eileen Welsom won a Pulitzer Prize for her reporting on the Manhattan Project's secret medical experiments during and shortly after World War II, injecting unsuspecting hospital patients with plutonium. She uncovered information through the Freedom of Information Act and by tracking down family members of the experiment's victims. How did you finally get the information that you needed? Was there a certain technique or a certain door that you knocked on that got you some of the stuff you needed?
It was through old-fashioned gumshoe reporting. Basically, I swept in everything I could find out about these patients. I followed every footnote. And one day, when I was rereading my file, my eye fell on the two words that would unlock the story. And those words were Italy, Texas. And the document stated that one of the scientists had contacted the physician of Cal 3 in Italy, Texas. Now, Cal 3 was the code name for the third California patient injected. And by then, I knew a lot about that patient, and I knew that I could find him, even if it meant going door-to-door in Italy, Texas.
Did you have to go door-to-door?
Well, what I did was I was sitting in the press room. As soon as I saw the words Italy, Texas, having gone to school in Italy, I knew it had to be a small town. So I called directory assistance, got the number for Italy City Hall, and got a hold of somebody there, the operator, and described this man I was looking for. I knew at that point he would have been an African-American who would have been about 80 years old, who had had his left leg amputated in 1947, 3 days after they gave him this injection of plutonium. So I called when I was talking to the person from the Italy City Hall, I described this man, and she said, "Oh, you're looking for Elmer Allen, but he died a year ago. Would you like his wife's number?" And I said, "Well, of course I would." And I took down the number and called her in about 3 minutes and set up an appointment to meet her that week in Texas, and flew over there and met with her. And she pulled out all her documents, and I pulled out all my documents, and her daughter was there. And by the end of the interview, we were all convinced that Elmer Allen was, in fact, Cal 3. And he was.
And what about government documents? How did you finally get them released?
Well, after I got the few fact sheets that they gave me, and after I found Elmer Allen, my paper then got our attorneys to file a huge new Freedom of Information Act request with the Department of Energy, and then our lawyers just began pushing and prodding them nearly every day, just hounding them to get some documents that we needed. And shortly before we went to press, we got about 6 memos or so, which absolutely confirmed that Elmer Allen was indeed Cal 3.
What impact did the story have on you as a reporter and as an American citizen?
Oh, it was an incredible story. It was the big story that nearly stopped the little paper. I mean, after Energy Secretary Hazel O'Leary admitted that in fact the government had done the plutonium experiment and many others, the story just grew overnight. And reporters from all over the country, all over the world, began calling the paper, trying to get more information from us. We ran out of fax paper. We ran out of copy and paper. Literally, at one time, every phone in the newsroom, someone was on hold waiting for me. And I just, I couldn't get to them. There would be 30 and 40 pink slips on my desk. I just, one afternoon, I just sat there and put my head down and cried because I was still trying to report the story also. The story was still unfolding. And I was trying to, I thought the best thing to do once I had, once my series was published was just give the people the names of the people I had found, give the reporters the names of the families, if the families agreed to that, and then they could make their own arrangements with them and do their own stories. So that's what they did. But I just sat there one afternoon and just, you know, I just put my head down and cried. It was overwhelming. The pressure and the stress, the excitement, and so on. And but eventually things calmed down, and we kept moving forward, and we kept writing stories, and the media would come in and film us as we worked. It was pretty crazy.
What about the impact of the story on your feelings as an American citizen?
It didn't, you know, it didn't make me any more cynical. I think I wasn't surprised. I don't think I'm any more wary than I've ever been. It confirmed what I knew. It did make me feel, as a reporter and a journalist, very proud, because this was a case where, you know, we're so reviled in the media, and rightly so, because we do a lot of things that aren't right or aren't well thought out. But sometimes, you know, we do things right, and sometimes we have the capacity to correct grave injustices. And this was a case where long simmering injustices were brought to light, and where the President of the United States finally stood up in front of the American people and said, hey, this was wrong, and we did wrong, and we're going to try and make sure that this never happens again. And for me as a reporter, that was exactly what I thought when I found that footnote. I thought, this is wrong. You know, the federal government shouldn't have done this. So there was a direct link for me between that emotion I had in that basement working all alone and finding that footnote and hearing President Clinton admit it to the American people. And I felt very proud and very moved by that.
Eileen Welsom is the author of The Plutonium Files.